So we will now move to the second case on our docket this morning. This is Wasim Baker versus Timothy Ward, the acting commissioner. And Ryan Christopher Locke is here for the appellant Baker. And Roger Chalmers is here for the appellee. And Mr. Locke, you may begin your argument.
Good morning, Your Honor. Thank you. Ryan Locke for Wasim Baker. Mr. Baker is a Muslim incarcerated in a Georgia prison. In 2017, he sued the prison official after they forcibly shaved his beard and kept him in a feces-covered cell, causing him injuries. But because Mr. Baker had more than three prior federal lawsuits dismissed to proceed in forma pauperis, he was required to allege that he was in imminent danger of serious physical injury at the time he filed the complaint. Although he did this, the district court dismissed the complaint. This court should reverse that dismissal because Mr. Baker properly alleged that he was in imminent danger of serious physical injury from being forcibly shaved, from being shaved with unsanitary and broken clippers, and from being exposed to feces. And first, I'd like to talk about the standard to show imminent danger. This standard is essentially a pleading requirement that comes out of the Prison Litigation Reform Act. And this court's sister circuits have emphasized that the imminent danger exception is a threshold procedural question as part of a simple statutory provision. In fact, the Seventh Circuit in C.R. Paglini versus Saini, that's 352 Federal 3rd 328, from 2003, said, to fine-tune what is serious enough to qualify for the exception would result in a complicated set of rules about what conditions are serious enough, all for a simple statutory provision governing when a prisoner must pay the filing fee for his claim. And the way that this court resolves this question is by looking at the complaint, taking the allegations as true, construing the complaint liberally because Mr. Baker was pro se when he filed it, and then conducting a de novo review. Mr. Baker properly alleged imminent danger in his complaint in a number of ways. He alleged that guards at the Georgia Diagnostic Prison forcibly shaved him in November 2012, December 2012, and November 2013. He also alleged that he was forcibly shaved at Georgia State Prison when he was moved there. He alleged that his back was injured.
That because he failed to comply with the, he was unwilling to comply with the grooming policy of the prison. I'm looking at Judge Royal's order in this case, and he says here, the court accepts these allegations as true, but construing the allegations in a light most favorable to Mr. Baker, he says, he alleges that he has been forcibly shaved numerous times at the prison and only suffered minor injuries, a cut on some. And that's, I mean, he was cut while he was shaving and suffered minor injuries. And so that's enough to establish imminent harm in the past and a likelihood to receive imminent danger and harm in the future?
Well, we don't have the cuts alone. We also have the injuries that he sustained in the process of being forcibly shaved, the injuries to his back. And then we also have what he alleged that they used chemicals on him to force him to comply, and those chemicals burned his eyes and throat. And this, the chemical spraying and the latest forcible shaving occurred in 2017, roughly 2 weeks before he filed this complaint. So I would say the allegations are a bit more expansive than merely being cut with the clippers. and that they're close in time to when he filed the complaint, which is when this court looks to see if imminent danger existed. And this pattern.
He was at Reidsville in 2017. Is he still at Reidsville?
You know, I'm not entirely sure, Your Honor.
You don't know where he is.
I have not looked to see where he is in the last month.
Okay, this case came out of Reidsville. He's been at a lot of different prisons. He's got a life sentence for murder, so.
Yes, Your Honor. And I think that also underscores the importance of the district court hearing cases like this. Now,
you're not claiming they are not allowed to use any force when he refuses to be shaved, are you?
Well, they're certainly, prison officials are certainly allowed to use force to maintain order in a prison. The problems here.
And to enforce the prison rules, reasonable prison rules.
Certainly. Mr. Dacre is Muslim, and that's why his religion
requires. Well, we understand, and there's a case challenging that, but at the time this all happened, that was a constitutional problem. I mean, it was a policy, and I don't know how he gets around that they were entitled to use some force in shaving him. I mean, he refuses to be shaved. I mean, that's established. So this goes on. I don't know how often it happens. How often does it happen?
And Your Honor, I think that
we've got about 40 cases of his over the same thing.
He has
more, about 40 cases.
Now he has more experience than I do in before this court and in the district court.
Right.
But I think to answer.
So in the question really here, we need to see what happens in that case challenging it. And, you know, court's going to sort out whether it's a good policy or not. I know that order stayed.
Well, and I think the questions that the court is asking now would be appropriate for the district court to consider in, for example, a motion for summary judgment. And so what we're talking about here is the threshold question of, will the court accept the complaint in an informal pauper status?
Well, I'm just speaking for myself and only based on the complaint here. The unsanitary clippers, he's been there in this prison for many years, and he keeps saying unsanitary clippers. And one of our decisions, I didn't make this up, just one of them says it's speculative because he's been being shaved all the time with the alleged unsanitary clippers, and he's never shown he's got a problem, you know, an infection. So that one doesn't really, it's clear that's speculative and it's not imminent. His own allegations make that. Then you've got, as opposed to the feces in that one ship, that one cell on one time where another inmate had been there and they didn't clean it up before Mr. Dacre was in there. And we've got another case already, he alleged about that, that's not gonna get imminent either. So the only thing to me that you potentially have is that, okay, the guards are using force when they shave him, but they're allowed to use force when they shave him. And so I look to see if the force is excessive and he doesn't really allege any injury. I don't know how we get there on this particular complaint in 2017, in September 2017. This is like 4 years ago.
And I understand the court's concern.
I mean, he's filed other lawsuits, much of them since then too.
And I think how I would respond to the court's concerns is, first, I think he is alleging injuries from the forcible shavings with his back and that sort of thing. For the feces covered cells, the Third Circuit in Gibbs said that inmates ought to be able to complain about these unsafe conditions without waiting for something to happen to them. And Mr. Dacre did allege in the complaint that he received a sinus infection from being in this cell. And
well, that is that other case a three striker?
Yes. Uh-huh. And so this, it's Gibbs versus Cross. It's cited in the brief. It's a 1998 Third Circuit case. And the Supreme Court recently held that there was no qualified immunity for keeping individuals in feces covered cells. And so I think a lot of these questions are the kinds of questions that should be litigated. And it could very well end up that Mr. Dacre.
Really what needs to be litigated is the Beard policy and the three, although if it's held to be constitutional, I don't know what's gonna happen in that case, but if it's held to be constitutional, this is gonna still go on and on. And and maybe they're gonna say it, you can't, you know, they're gonna do, let him have his 3 inches, you know. I think the policy now is 1/2 inch, right?
It's either a half inch or an inch. It's something around there. It's well less than the 3 inches that Mr.
Dacre. And what is his request? He wants a 3 inch or he wants no shaving?
I think he's required to have a beard as big as his hand, which is about 3 inches.
So you think if he gets a 3 inch beard, he's still going to allow them to shave him to 3 inches?
We'll see what happens, Judge.
But really, that's what's going on here. It's really the policy that needs to be litigated on the merits, not this individual this one time shaving in September 2017.
And I think that what we're looking for here is, did he allege any serious physical injury and imminent danger of it occurring again? And
what you've got here is whether we've got repetitive complaints about the same thing over and over and over. And the court's already ruled on about 3 or 4 of them, saying it's not enough. I don't know what this one has that's any different than the 3 appeals I just, you know, we talked about. That's my problem, is what we've already done in these other cases. Although they're non-published, they are his cases.
And Your Honor, if I could, I know I'm out of time. If I could take maybe a minute to respond to your latest point. The other cases they don't cover these same specific acts, so they're not duplicative in that way. They're unpublished, so they're non-binding. But I think the court's concern is that Mr. Dacre could very well go on to lose, that the force could have been authorized.
I'm not concerned about that at all. I'm concerned about the imminent danger requirement of the PLRA, and particularly when you've got a serial litigant, which, you know, this is not his 4th or his 5th, you know, this is his 30th.
I would point to the pattern that occurred over the 4 years, the fact that the last forcible shaving and the chemicals occurred about 2 weeks before he filed this complaint, a little bit under 2 weeks. And the fact that it's the same defendants who are doing this to him over time. And I think that this policy only supports that there is an imminent threat, because assumingly the prison will continue to attempt to enforce this policy as they did over the 4 years of acts in this complaint.
You may not know this, but obviously you got three of these decided. Before he was a 3-striker, has he gotten any IFP since he's been a 3-striker? My sense was he'd had still a few more.
I don't want to mislead the court. I'm not entirely sure. I don't believe so. But if I do discover one, then if I could write a letter to the court.
I'm not, and I'm not sure it's totally relevant. I was just curious if you knew. Okay, you've answered my questions. Thank you.
Well, Mr. Locke, over the years, he's complained about a lot more than just the prison's grooming policy. Is my understanding incorrect that he's filed over 1,000 of these complaints in federal court over the years?
I don't know the exact number, but I know that he's prolific.
Yeah, he's prolific. And then so there's an alternative basis for the dismissal by the district judge. The judge says here on page 10 of his order, furthermore, and in light of plaintiff's well-known history of filing frivolous and duplicative claims, the court further finds that this complaint is both malicious and an abuse of judicial process. So, we could affirm the district court just on the alternative finding alone, that the claims are duplicative, malicious, and abuse under the federal rules of civil procedure, didn't we?
Well, I would argue that the claims are not duplicative, and I would point to the chart on page 37 of our brief that tracks the dates of the incidents complained about in the various lawsuits. And so I would say that at the very least, the case before this court, these incidents are separate and distinct dates. And he's asking for both injunctive and monetary relief. And so he's permitted to file multiple complaints based on actions occurring in different dates. Whether that's a good strategic choice or not, I'm not sure, but the law certainly allows him to do that. And so what he complains about here is different from what he's complained about in other cases.
All right, thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor.
We'll hear from the appellee, Mr. Chalmers.
May it please the court. Good morning, Roger Chalmers for the state of Georgia. Wasim Dacre is a three striker, so now to bring a lawsuit, he must pay the filing fee in full at the outset of his case rather than piecemeal over time. That's what the appeal is about. This court's precedents provide the law that is needed to address Mr. Dacre's contentions. Our position is there's no need to break new ground here. But I would like to point the court to a case outside of this circuit, Lewis v. Sullivan. It's a Seventh Circuit case from 2002, 279 F3rd 526. Because Lewis captures the why behind some of the points that we're talking about. Lewis explains that 1915G imposes a real limitation on a prisoner's ability to bring claims in court, but it is a statutory limitation. And specifically, it's a recognition by Congress that there's no constitutional entitlement to a subsidy. And the full import of this is understood when we see that in the statute's text, there's no exception for important claims or substantial claims or even for claims that address fundamental rights. So I start with this because when you look at the factors, the 1915G factors, you come back to those basic principles. The court's precedents established that Dacre can overcome his three strikes and proceed IFP only with plausible allegations that he is under imminent danger of serious physical injury. He doesn't have to prove that contention, but he has to have plausible allegations showing that it is so. And as this court has said in Brown, they can't be speculative or general allegations.
Counsel, would you agree with me that science has established that diseases like HIV and hepatitis are contracted and transmitted through bodily fluid transmissions or exchanges? Do you agree with me on that, that it's generally recognized?
I don't have a reason to disagree with you, Your Honor.
Okay. And so that's, for example, why we don't reuse hypodermic needles. There would be a great risk in doing that of introducing bloodborne diseases like hepatitis and HIV to an individual who had a hypodermic needle reused on himself or herself. So why isn't that the same problem if we're talking about what he has alleged, which is effectively a policy of using unsanitized clippers, from one inmate to another, when we know that there is HIV and hepatitis in the prisons, why isn't that, it doesn't seem speculative to me any more than it's speculative that, the reuse of a hypodermic needle sterilization, even reuse at all, I guess, can introduce bloodborne illnesses that for which there is no known treatment, at least with respect to HIV, no known cure, I should say. Why isn't that the same case with respect to his allegations that there is a policy of using unsanitized clippers?
Your Honor, I think Mr. Dacre's allegations show why? Because he claims that he has been required to use unsanitized clippers on many occasions before, and he.
So you're saying that because he hasn't contracted a disease, there's no risk.
No, that's not in all of what I'm saying. I'm saying that he has provided fact information which shows that his allegation is speculative. He says that unsanitized clippers are used, but he doesn't plead either that he has been harmed by it or that this is a means by which disease is actually transferred in the prison. He's speculating on that. And that's different from other cases, like the cases that the council cites from the Ninth Circuit that talk about a failure to screen for HIV or other infectious disease, where
feel about using unsanitized clippers that you knew had just been used on somebody else had HIV? I mean, I'm gonna assume that you wouldn't do that because you are aware of the science that says that that is how blood-borne diseases like that are transmitted. So what is speculative about it? Maybe it's speculative as to whether he actually contracts it, but it's not speculative as to whether that's a way that it is transmitted.
Your Honor, I would have to say I'm not aware of science that says that the genes that are challenged in this case, the use of broken or unsanitized clippers, can actually transfer disease in the way that Mr. Dacre alleges. And he does not point to science in his complaint. He doesn't need to, but he also doesn't point to experience in his complaint that gives some plausibility to his allegation. He doesn't say that disease, for example, has been shown to be rampant because of the use of unsanitized clippers. And he doesn't show that he has been harmed in any way. And again, I think it's important that he alleges that this shaving with unsanitized clippers has gone back to 2012 and 2013, and yet he himself has not been harmed by it. And again, he hasn't pointed to any harm to others.
To show that he was harmed to establish imminent danger, right? I mean, you had to wait until you were harmed. Then there would be plenty of claims that couldn't be brought at all except by the estate of somebody. You don't have to wait until you're harmed if you adequately allege imminent danger.
And this is the part that I respectfully disagree with you, Your Honor, on, is that I don't believe he has adequately alleged imminent danger when he specifically pleaded that this means of shaving is used on a regular basis, but he fails to plead any facts to allow the court to reasonably infer that the use of that means to shave actually causes injury or causes a threat of injury to other inmates. There's nothing for the court to draw upon to make that finding other than, respectfully, our speculation, perhaps from the science, that using a damaged clipper or a clipper of that kind that he describes will transfer disease. If I could, I'd like to say that there's a suggestion that the analysis the district court would do on a 1915G look at a complaint is somehow different from other analyses that are done initially in the pleadings. And I'd say that it's not really. This court has said, and the decisions are consistent with those from other circuits, the Chavez case from the 10th Circuit, or the 2nd Circuit, excuse me, and the Chiar-Paglini case from the 7th Circuit, both say that conclusory allegations will not do. So what is needed are specific allegations of a present imminent danger that may result in serious physical harm, or another way that this court has phrased it in Brown in the 2004 case is specific allegations of ongoing serious physical injury or a pattern of prison misconduct evidencing a likelihood of that kind of injury. So there are two points I'd like to make here that I think show the deficiencies in the complaint on this present imminent danger point. And I think the district court got both of them right. The first is that the allegations of imminent danger of serious physical injury are speculative and they're conclusory. And the second is that the prison condition that is really being challenged here is one of Mr. Dacre's own making, as Judge Wilson and Judge Hull, you've noted in your questioning. So if I could take the first speculative and conclusory nature of the allegations. Mr. Dacre says in his pleadings that he will, on occasion, but not always, refuse to comply with the GDC beard length restriction. His choice to comply, his choice to shave on occasion, shows that he can avoid a use of force. He also says that GD officers may ultimately, but not as a first resort, use force to get him to comply. And I think it is telling to look at his allegations. In this case, a use of force occurred fully 2 months after Dacre was apt to shave. In that interim time period, he was issued a disciplinary report. He was provided disciplinary hearing. He was, after that hearing, found guilty and given sanctions. One of the sanctions was to be moved to the Tier 2 location. And in all that time, he was not forcibly shaved. Instead, after that, officers returned to his cell and asked him a second time, and then again a third time, will you shave to comply with the policy? And it was only after that that force was used to get him to comply. And this gets to your questions, Judge Wilson and Judge Hull. In other words, use of force is not inherent in the GDC's enforcement of its beard length restrictions. It only comes after there is an escalation of some sort. And then we get to the use of force. It is speculative, I would submit, at best, from Dacre's allegations that prison guards always use pepper spray when they force a prisoner to shave. It is speculative to, I would suggest, to conclude that anytime a prisoner is removed involuntarily from his cell and handcuffed and then escorted to the barbershop to be shaved, that he will be subjected to serious physical injury. And on these points, we can look to the complaint again, because Dacre says he was forcibly shaved, in his words, in 2012 and 2013, and yet he does not allege that he suffered injury on those occasions. So if you go back to the standard, is harm ongoing? It's certainly
he does say that he was cut.
He does, Your Honor. He does say he was cut on some, as you mentioned earlier, but that, I would submit, is not a serious physical injury. So the harm is not ongoing. Is the harm imminent? And I think here we should look to the cases that Mr. Dacre and his counsel cites. They cite to the Jacoby case of this court from 2021 and to Smith v. Clemens from 2012. Look again at all the steps that Mr. Dacre says occurred before force was used. The guards asked, he was issued a DR, he was given a hearing, the guards asked again, and only then was force used. That kind of situation is categorically different from the situation in Jacoby and Smith v. Clemens, where for some reason, guards without reason and without notice use force gratuitously against prisoners. There's no allegations that Mr. Dacre is beaten simply because he does not shave, only that the prison here takes steps to enforce its shaving policy. And there is only speculation that in that multi-step process, he is in imminent danger of serious physical injury.
Well, let me ask you this, counsel. Judge Sands, I believe in the Southern District of Georgia, entered an order finding that the Georgia Department of Corrections union policy is unconstitutional, and that order is now on appeal. If that order is affirmed, what effect would that have on this case?
Your Honor, it's a good question, and it goes back to Judge Hull's question or comment earlier, is do you need to wait for a ruling in that Smith case in order to sort out where this case should go? And so the answer I would give the court is no, absolutely not. And it's actually a very simple and clear answer given the precedents. Both this circuit's precedents and also all of the out-of-circuit precedents that are cited by Mr. Dacre's counsel indicate clearly that whether there is an imminent danger of serious physical injury is determined when the complaint was filed. So the simple and short answer to this question is that when Mr. Dacre filed this lawsuit at the time that he filed this lawsuit, the Smith case was not out. There was no, and so whatever occurs either based on the district court ruling in Smith or this court's ruling, ultimate ruling in Smith, cannot change the fact.
Counsel, 2 minute warning.
Thank you. Cannot change the fact that he was not in imminent danger at the time a suit was filed. There's another component to that timing question, which I think is important, is that, and it goes to whether there was some sort of gratuitous violence being inflicted on Mr. Dacre. At the time that he says force was used, there was no guidance, for example, from the district court in Smith or from this court on the constitutionality. And so there was no suggestion that there was gratuitous violence like in Jacoby or Smith.
Could we decide this case on the alternative ruling alone? Baker has a well-known history of filing frivolous and duplicative claims, and that his claim is malicious and an abuse of judicial process for that reason, even aside from whether or not he's in imminent danger?
Your Honor, I'll say only that the District Judge Royal issued a reasoned opinion on those points. We did not, the state of Georgia did not take a position on those separate legal issues. So I'm not prepared to argue, and I would not argue that those are separate grounds for dismissal. What I would say is that we believe the 1915G ground is significant and sufficient in itself, and that Mr. Dacre, if he wants to proceed with this constitutional challenge, must do so after paying the full filing fee.
Right. Thank you.
Yeah, and this dismissal on the 1915G is without prejudice.
That's correct.
Right.
That's correct, Your Honor. And I think it gets back to the Lewis case that I cited earlier. I'm sorry, did I? But it does matter, and this goes to the second piece. The prison condition being challenged is one of Mr. Dacre's making because he has refused instructions to shave. And it does matter that force was not like the gratuitous force used in the Jacoby and the Smith case. The point is that force is sometimes necessary in a prison setting. And as the court has recognized, that's what occurred here.
Do you know if he's ever paid the filing fee in any case? I mean, they let you pay the filing fee over time, right? You can pay it in pieces, right?
That is an option for those prisoners who are not three strikers. Under 1915A, you can pay in pieces. Mr. Dacre, I know from other litigation, has paid the filing fee, both in the district court and on appeal. But
can he, now that he is a three striker, pay the filing fee in pieces?
He cannot.
They don't let you have a plan?
No, that's an option.
You have to pay it a lump sum?
That's correct, Your Honor. That's an option that Mr. Dacre had before he filed three or more frivolous lawsuits that were dismissed on that ground. But now that he is a three striker, he cannot take that payment plan, so to speak,
okay,
to pay the fee up front.
I would have thought he couldn't. I learned something. But anyway, it's a dismissal without prejudice right now.
Yes, it is. Thank you, Your Honors. If there are no further questions, we'd ask the court to affirm.
Thank you, Mr. Chalmers. Mr. Lackey reserves some time for rebuttal. How about that? If the dismissal was without prejudice, how do we find there was an abuse of discretion? Because we've come before that if there's a dismissal without prejudice, generally there's no abuse of discretion because the litigant can just refile the case.
Well, I think first, here Mr. Dacre could not refile the case because some of these acts are now barred by the statute of limitations. And two, it's a de novo review of the trial court's dismissal, not an abuse of discretion. And I think this court can say, hey, it's just wrong under 1915G to dismiss a case like this, that Congress passed this law for a reason. And Congress wanted prisoners to be able to challenge unconstitutional policies, particularly when there's an imminent threat of violence against the prisoner. And this is the mechanism by which they do it. So I don't think, if this court affirmed the dismissal, I don't think that Mr. Dacre could just turn around and pay the filing fee. I think that he would suffer consequences because some of these have aged out. Yeah, I think my opposing counsel talking about the HIV, If the prison had a Russian roulette policy where they would just engage in Russian roulette until you shave, opposing counsel would argue that because no one's been shot, that that's not alleging imminent violence. And that's just not the case. Here, Mr. Dacre's alleged several ways that he's been harmed. And because it's an ongoing pattern with the same defendants, he's alleged that he's at the threat of imminent harm. And simply because he's not contracted HIV over the years that they have cut him with unsanitary clippers does not remove it from a potential threat. And you can look at the various three striker cases that
does he tell us what unsanitized clippers are? I mean, you know, you go to the hairdresser and they cut your hair and then they wash them off. They use the same clippers, but you know, they run them on the sink. I don't even know what unsanitized clippers means. I can't imagine they don't wash them off and put hot water on. I mean, I don't know what unsanitized clippers mean.
And Your Honor, if it turns out that none
of... Does he say in his complaint what unsanitized clippers means? It's never cleaned for months or days, or does he give us any details other than conclusory allegation of unsanitized clippers?
I believe he alleges that they're not sanitized after the person before him. I don't think he alleges.
But exactly. What does he mean by sanitized? Put in, you know, some kind of steam, hot water, not clean. I mean, I don't understand what unsanitized is.
Sure, sure.
I don't know why, but I thought I recalled reading that they weren't put in any kind of barbicide or anything like that.
Right. I think they just were not treated at all. Obviously different from...
But does this complaint say what he means by unsanitized?
Well, I think even if it doesn't go into detail about what...
I'm going to go read it, but just, you know, if it says anything other than unsanitized clippers.
I don't believe it does. And if it does, I don't think it goes into great detail. But I also think it doesn't matter, because I think the normal usage of unsanitized shows that there's a risk. And he certainly alleges that there's a risk of him contracting HIV.
But doesn't he also allege that there are procedures that the Georgia prisons require that they, in order to sanitize the clippers, that the prison guards don't comply with?
He does, and he cites directly to those regulations. So this court could look to what those regulations require and find that the allegation is that the prison does not do what's necessary under those allegations.
I want to go back to the alternative reason for the dismissal. And you indicated that we review a section 1915 dismissal de novo, but it's our precedent. It's clear, isn't it, that whether a suit is duplicative or malicious, we review that for an abuse of discretion.
Yes, Your Honor, I would agree. If there are no other questions, I thank the panel for its time.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Locke and Mr. Chalmers.
And were you caught upon it, Mr. Locke?
Yes, Your Honor.
Well, then, we thank you for your service.
Thank you.
Appreciate your service. It was well argued. Thank you.